Welcome, friends. Welcome, community, back to the Abundant Journey podcast. Thank you for hanging out with us today. We have a special episode lined up for you. Nick, how are you doing? You pumped about this one?
Yeah, I'm doing really well, and I am very pumped because it's so fun when we have guests back onto the show. And the guests that we're having today, one of my favorite episodes of all time, which is saying a lot because I love a lot of our episodes, but I will let you bring them in, Nick.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have Emily and Adam hanging out with us today. And if you scroll back on our website or on the Apple Podcast episodes, you got to go back to episode number 4, which they were our first guests we had ever had on. And they were gracious enough to hang out with us while we fumbled through questions and tried to figure out what the heck to do with a podcast. So Emily and Adam, thanks for being back on.
Hey guys, hey Nick and Nick, we are really honored to be back.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. No, well, and you know, I know you guys, we've spent time hanging out, talking investing and entrepreneurship over the last couple of years and always love our conversations. Really wanted to bring you guys back on as you've made some expansion and shifts, but we want to get back into your original story and maybe remind the audience who you guys are, where you live, what kind of started your journey and where you are today.
Absolutely. My name's Emily Courtwright. This is my husband, Adam Roberts. We currently live in Fort Worth, Texas, and we are both engineers by trade. So we started out at the traditional path, going to college, getting a good job, climbing the corporate ladder, until GE one day made the announcement that they were selling off our businesses. So we were with General Electric, and they were selling off the businesses we were at. That was the kick in the butt that we needed to make a change in our lives. And we had just recently gone to a Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki training on real estate investing. We were living in California at the time. It just wasn't, the numbers weren't working. And so we totally shifted. We up and moved from California to Texas. I left my corporate job at 28 years old and started our real estate investing business, while Adam kind of stayed in corporate and brought in a W-2 job so that I could build the business. But we started with single family flips and rentals and wholesales. We transitioned then to multifamily, kind of like Monopoly. We sold our little greenhouses and traded up for apartment complexes. And we have done multifamily really very heavily for the past 7 years. And so that was the core of our business until we had to make another shift, which we'll talk about today.
Yeah, I love your story because I love how, one, you didn't just fall into the victim thing of like, oh man, they're closing down the business, engineers, what are we going to do now? But you really leaned into the new opportunity that it created to get more education, to make a big career move. I do encourage our listeners to go back because it is a pretty comprehensive dive into your story. So do listeners go back to episode 4, and because we asked a lot of the questions about approaching risk and those kinds of things. But I am, you know, just again, if we can go back real fast with you guys, as you went to the Robert Kiyosaki class and as you were just thinking about, okay, instead of going to another W-2 engineering job and sticking with that for the rest of your career, what were just a few of the principles for you that were like, no, we're going to go into real estate investing and become entrepreneurs?
Really, I think at the heart of it all is just being able to control every aspect of it. And, you know, when you're working in corporate America and in a matrix organization, right, there is a strategy there, right? It's your manage your career. Either you lead people or you're on a team with a manager as an individual contributor. And there's kind of there's a routine to your day there. There's a strategy behind where you work, what you do. And, you know, the whole episode we went through in California, to your point, it was proving to us that you just don't have any control over that destiny, really. I mean, yes, you can kind of control here and there. You can like set up your email folders and, you know, you can, you know, make strong coffee in the break room if you want. But it's like when it comes down to it, your destiny is just not in your own hands. And so, you know, when we would go to those events, those real estate events, which at the time were just totally radical compared to what we were used to. I mean, the thinking, the language, the vocabulary, the mindset was just on a different planet. The one thing that stands out is just, hey, this is like fully in my control. Like I can do whatever the heck I want and I can build it as fast or as slow. I can buy this, I can buy that. I can learn from this person or I can learn from that person, whatever. It's your chalk and your chalkboard.
And for me, it was the numbers. For like, I was making $60,000 a year in my salaried job as a starting engineer. And they would show an example where somebody could flip a house, one house, and make $50,000 to $60,000. And I was like, wait a second, I work all year for that? Or an example of a rental property where you hold on to it for a couple years, you'd say 5-10 years, and with the appreciation and the mortgage pay down, you have an asset worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I was like, I can't make that kind of money in my day job. That was my mindset at the time. But I saw the numbers and I saw the potential to build our wealth and set us up for success in the long term and financial freedom in the long term. And that's what really drew me into real estate investing.
I love that. And I love that you guys really ran after this, like Nick is saying, and said, hey, we're going to get in the driver's seat of our lives and we're going to start building something. One thing I don't know that we talked about on the first episode was how you guys went from single family flipping, you were doing a lot of that, and then you shifted to multifamily. And rather than make a pitch for multifamily investing, I want to know for you guys, there's a lot of people who say, hey, we're going to build a portfolio of 20 rental homes or 30 rental homes, and then we're going to go hang out on the beach. You guys kind of embraced the pain and said, we're going to build a business where investors are dependent on us, and we have to steward these tenants who live in our communities. What made you guys specifically say, hey, we're going to be gluttons for punishment almost, and say, we're going to embrace the business side of this and build a business?
I think the one thing that we learned working at GE is, you know, whatever gets measured gets acted upon, right? And so Emily and I, as way back, I mean, as early as our, the, you know, before we were married even, we would measure the performance of our personal financials every month. I mean, we'd get together and spend an hour looking at how much we made, how much we spent, what does the balance sheet look like? And early on with the single family business, of course, the balance sheet, it had houses on it, rent houses, you know, we're flipping houses. And we noticed, you know, as 2016 or so, it just, the financial performance of that business was leveling out, plateauing. It wasn't growing at the speed at which we needed it to, especially for me to join Emily full time. You know, back then I was still working at a W-2 job. And so we just said, oh, wow, we just noticed that it's just very linear. Okay, you flip a house, you make $30,000, you buy a rental, now you add a couple hundred dollars a month to your income. And, you know, that's just not going to cut it. So we said, well, what can we do, right? And we brainstormed, you know, we figured it's probably going to have to go bigger. And so we looked at commercial real estate, you know, strip centers, retail. We made offers on mobile home parks. I mean, we started to scale in that fashion. But it wasn't until we started to network with a large multifamily organization that it started to make sense for us to go in that direction.
And I know Nick was saying not to give the pitch for multifamily. I might ask for it. You know, just I would love to hear, like, okay, at its best, why do you love multifamily as an asset class? But where I want to go with that is that, obviously, you've made a bit of a transition in terms of your acquisition goals, even just in the last year or so. And so talk to me about, you know, why you continue to hold on to and be heavily invested in multifamily projects that you have, but then kind of leading into how the landscape of multifamily has changed over the last 1 to 2 years and what that's meant for you as you've had a business that's been largely built around your multifamily holdings.
Absolutely. And we got into multifamily because it was really the next level of sophistication for us. We went from being the landlord of 11 homes and flipping 25 houses and saying, you know what? We want to be the business owners. We don't want to be the landlord anymore. And so going into large multifamily put us in that business owner role where we have full-time property management underneath us. We do not deal with the day-to-day tenants and maintenance and things like that. Like, we hire somebody to do that for us and we become the business owners. So for us, that was a great learning experience to be able to step aside and say, okay, now we need to be the leaders and we need to run a business with each apartment complex that we buy. And so we have acquired 8 large apartment complexes ranging from 120 to 320 units over the last 7 years. And we still own 6 of them. So 6 of them are still fully under our ownership. But within the last year and a half or so, the cash flow on our properties and all of the other properties that we have invested in passively, which are around 18. I mean, we have millions of dollars invested in the multifamily industry with other people. And the cash flows started to decline or stop from a lot of the properties. And so, like Adam mentioned, we do our financials every month. We kind of budget for future years. So we're sitting there at the end of 2022 and we're looking at 2023's budget and we're like, half of our income from our multifamily is completely gone. It has stopped because expenses have gone up, interest rates have gone up. And we looked at each other and we said, we have to find a cash flowing investment. And we had a chunk of money left over from one asset sale. And we said, this money has to cash flow. Like, it has to, because as full-time investors now, our cash flow from our investments pays for diapers and daycare and mortgage and groceries. Right. And, you know, we kind of had this come to Jesus moment that we have to pivot to find a cash flowing asset class.
Yeah, absolutely. No. And, you know, I think that speaks to the necessity as entrepreneurs and investors of things are always changing and you need to be willing to adapt. You need to be willing to pivot. So talk to us a little bit about what you've made a shift into, but then also really what led you down that journey.
Yeah. So we, in 2023, we pivoted pretty aggressively into mortgage note investing. And Emily is part of a business mastermind group through her brokerage, Keller Williams. And that mastermind group is very diverse. You know, they cover all types of businesses and investing, and it's not just focused on multifamily or any one type, but it is real estate focused. And so we were introduced to mortgage note investing through that group. And then we subsequently joined another investing network that is purely focused on the investments into notes. And what's really cool is, you know, you can have all sorts of different holdings in your portfolio, right? I mean, everybody loves real estate. It's a good growth, you know, type of investment, but mortgage notes is all the way on the opposite side of the spectrum. All it is cash flow. I mean, it's pure cash flow. You're essentially purchasing a cash flow stream. And there's no growth. In fact, the balance of the investment declines as you receive payments, right? So, so it's really for us, it was like exactly what we needed. You know, we needed something. We had a chunk of change from a property sale in 2023, and we said, this has to cash flow. Like, this cannot go into some asset class that has some cash flow and some growth. No, it has to cash flow. And that's what we did. We took that money, we directly invested into mortgage notes. And, you know, shortly after we started doing it ourselves, we said, wow, I think our investors would love this. I mean, you know, across the 6 properties that we still hold in the multifamily business, you know, we have maybe 1,000 or so investors. And I'm always getting phone calls like, oh, when's your next deal? Or when are you going to start paying me? And so, yeah, we said, why don't we start getting our investors involved in this? And so we did that too.
At the very basic, the fundamental concept of a mortgage is that you are making your payment every month. And if you've ever bought a house and with a mortgage, sometimes you get a letter a few months later and said, hey, your mortgage was sold. Instead of this company, now you need to pay this company. Well, that's really all the homeowner sees. But on the back end, your lender sold that mortgage to somebody. And what most people don't realize is that normal people like you and me can buy mortgages on the secondary market. Like behind the scenes, we can buy other people's mortgages. And we can be the ones that then get the principal and the interest every single month. And so the borrower kind of just sees the letter saying, okay, now you need to pay this new company. But in the back end, there's normal people sometimes just buying mortgages.
It's a really fascinating investment class. I'm curious if this is something that, as you've delved into it, it's like this has been an attractive asset for people to invest in for years and years and years, and you just just recently discovered it, or if it's been something that really has become more attractive in the last couple of years because of interest rates and things being higher. Like, is it kind of a unique opportunity right now in the market, or is this just something that feels like a steady eddy, no matter what real estate and interest rates are doing? This is a great spot to be in.
You know, my impression is it's a smaller community than what I'm used to on the real estate side. That's not to say, I mean, it's a very healthy and liquid market, right? I mean, You know, even just in the group that we're in, I'm seeing dozens upon dozens of note transactions occurring monthly. So it's active. I think really what it comes down to as far as like the market and is it a good time or is it, you know, did we find just the right time to pivot? You know, I really think that the investor always has an expectation of returns. So, for example, in a mortgage note, a completely, you know, passive investor who doesn't have to do anything, like say someone that I partner with to go buy a mortgage note, and then I'm going to handle all the work. Like I'm going to do all the due diligence. I'm going to buy the note. I'm going to, you know, manage it. That investor is going to expect a rate of return around 7-8%, right? It's a little bit better than you can get today in, say, a high yield savings account. But in general, in most markets and most economies, that's a heck of a return for just like not doing anything. Right. For the active investor, for like Emily and I going out and buying mortgage notes, you can get returns as high as like 14% yield, right? Like interest rate return.
Yeah.
And that's irregardless of what the mortgage interest rate is. I mean, I could go out and buy, you know, a mortgage that was originated 3 years ago when interest rates were like 2-3%.
Yeah.
And because of the price point that I buy the note at, which is usually a discount to what the balance is, I can command a higher rate of return than what's on the mortgage itself.
Interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I want to do this. We're going to continue down the path here of the note investing. I think this is really helpful for our listeners. Before we go a little bit further, though, I wanted to backtrack at something that you guys said. You talked about how there was the Keller Williams Network, and then you guys were in some different masterminds. I don't want to glaze over that. One, because you've built your business around relationships, and you guys have really recognized the value in relationships with, one, people who will surround you and help you along your journey, but also, two, I mean, that's where you've gotten a lot of your investors as well. And so I want to pause for a second. I want you guys to, in terms of the notes and what you're doing, and as you had to make that pivot and were willing to step out to something you'd never experienced before or never really dove into, what does that network, the relationships around you, what part does that play for you guys in where you are today?
Absolutely. And we completely leverage other people's systems and efforts. And we don't want to recreate the wheel with anything that we do. And so notes was the exact same way. We were introduced to an education and coaching and mentoring program that would help accelerate your jump into notes. And so we joined that program, and within 2 months, we were ready to buy. We were educated. We could do our due diligence. We could check, you know, we could be presented a note and say, do you want to buy this? And we could say yes or no. And so that was a really, really tight time frame to be able to implement a new business and a new investment strategy into our portfolio. So within three months or so, we had already purchased our first notes. And fast forward to today, we've bought 18 of them. But like I said, we completely leveraged the systems, the mentoring, the note brokers. Like, we are not out there calling and sending letters to note to lenders. Like, we are utilizing a note broker that is bringing us notes to look at. And so to that point, that is how we were able to implement this business so quickly. But time is money. I mean, the quicker you can get that the cash flow and the investment made, the quicker you can get cash flow in every single month. So it has literally been just about 1 year, and we have been able to, you know, invest and grow this business really quickly and efficiently, but it's because we've leveraged other people and their systems.
I think that's really helpful to see. And you guys have been huge proponents of continuing education and recognizing that that has gotten you where you are today. Maybe this is a unique one, but flip the other side of this. There's a lot of mentor programs. There's a lot of coaching programs out there. For the listener that says, hey, I don't know where to jump in. I don't know who's a bad actor. There's so much noise out there, and it seems like everybody's got a program. How do you guys decipher what community to try to get plugged into? And because you, I know, have been willing to spend the money in order to learn and grow. And that can be a big stretch for some people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we definitely lean on people to help us with those decisions too. I think, you know, on the real estate side, for multifamily, what really struck me, and we'd been to a bunch of different events, you know, we knew about the various different programs, but what struck me about the one that we eventually decided to become a part of is all of the weekend sales pitches that you would go to where they, you know, sign people up. Half the room was people already in the program. And I was like, well, that's weird. Like, you know, they've already been pitched. They're already in the program. What are they doing here? Right. And so I talked to those folks, right. So it made for very easy confirmation, right. I would talk to those folks at the event and say, hey, why are you here? First of all, like, you're already in the program. Didn't you already swipe your credit card? And then, you know, furthermore, what do you think about the program? And generally the overall people were there to continue learning, right? Cause there was still content being presented. And yeah, it just, you know, everybody I talked to was like, oh, it's phenomenal. You know, I love it. This and that. So that made that really easy. You know, on the notes side, I was intrigued, especially now since we're going through a market cycle. I was pleasantly surprised, or not surprised. I think it was good to see that the notes network that we joined is led by a guy who, he's been through like every real estate cycle since the early 80s, right? And that meant a lot to me, especially since we're going through one right now today. And he's willing to speak with members of the group, you know, one-on-one about the experience of going through those cycles. And so what struck me is like, well, if this guy has survived every single cycle in real estate, well, he must be doing something right. Because not every cycle is the same, right? They're all different. And if he's been able to see around all those corners through his business, which has been primarily in mortgage notes, that means a lot. So.
Yeah, no doubt. And, as I think to this, I think is related, but thinking about as you're evaluating late 2022, looking ahead to 23, and seeing that the multifamily strategy that you had been implementing is not sustainable in the ways you needed it to be for your business. I mean, on one hand, that's certainly a scary thing to just think like, okay, we've got to pivot. But I think equally scary can be, opening up, putting all options on the table again of what direction to go in investing. And I know a lot of investors and entrepreneurs at that point can get paralysis from the number of options available to them. Shiny object syndrome starts to set in. I've been really impressed in your story how decisive
y'all have been, as well as once you make a decision, it seems like you're pretty laser focused on it. And so could you speak to just what have been the things that have helped you make decisions quickly and then tune out all of the other options and avoid distractions?
You know, I think with each pivot, whether it was from single family into multifamily or now multifamily into notes, it has been about what is our criteria? What do we need financially? And back with multifamily, we wanted bigger growth. We wanted that 2x, that up, you know, up to 3x. And as the GPs, it could be up to 10x your money. And we were willing to do the work. Now, or back in 2020, beginning of 2023, it was the opposite. It was, I need cash flow. And looking at, okay, well, we could go to mobile home parks, we could go to self-storage, we could go to this, but the cap rates had compressed so much that there were pretty much no other options that I was finding that had, and then as soon as notes was presented to us and I saw the cash flow potential, I knew that's where we were going. Just because all of the other real estate asset classes have had their cap rates compress, their expenses go up, the cash flow compress. And so it really kind of stemmed back to, you know, we do our personal financials every month. We know where we need to be. And we kind of we're on the same page with our goals. And back, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, goal was growth. Last year, goal was cash flow. And so I think going back to the fundamental of knowing your numbers, doing your financials every month, your income, your expenses, your assets, and your liabilities, those can be a roadmap to your investing decisions and a really important roadmap.
Yeah. And as far as avoiding like the analysis paralysis and shiny object syndrome, really, you know, the folks that you hang around, the groups that you associate yourself with, if it's maybe a business mastermind or, you know, people that you are close with and share the same philosophies with, you know, you tend to find people that are doing things that you want to be doing, right? And you tend to see how they do it and, you know, kind of what their mentality is. And then you just latch on, right? You just say, hey, look, that guy's doing what I want to do. And, or this group is doing what I want to do. And that helps with the, you know, the fear of just like, oh man, am I like the only person out there thinking about doing this? Because to be quite honest with you, at the end of the day, we're pretty risk averse when it comes down to it. I look at other folks who got started in real estate maybe 10 years ago. They've done, you know, they may have done things differently. They may have gone faster or bigger or riskier, right? But I think if you can identify with, you know, a network or a group or if it's a person that is just doing what you want to do, there's no better way to follow in that path, right? And those people are generally also willing to help, which is great.
Yeah. And I really appreciate both of those responses. Emily, to your point about just getting really clear on your goals, I imagine that has got to be helpful to our listeners. It's helpful for me to just think through like, okay, a lot of my analysis paralysis does come from the fact that I don't really know what the number one thing that I need or want is. And if that becomes crystal clear, then it's a whole lot easier to figure out like, okay, well, what is the best vehicle to get me to my ultimate goal most safely and most quickly? So I appreciate both of those responses. It's awesome as well, clearly, to have the social proof of others around you that it's like, okay, it's not just theoretical, but there's actually people who have done it and are currently doing it and will help me along. So I love that you've gotten clear on that and found that in this note investing community.
I want to shift a little bit and, you know, you guys, you dove into notes, you educated yourself on notes, and then you were bought in and started going for it. Curious how then taking that to the next level with your investors, what those conversations were like, because you had built a community of investors around multifamily. And so then to have those conversations and to what were maybe... what were those conversations like? But were there some challenges in that with the people you were working with?
It has definitely been a journey because a lot of our investors, like you mentioned, were brought into our database with the mindset of investing in multifamily. And so to have to educate and shift a perspective a little bit. But if you think about, let's say we have 2,000 people in our database, about 1,000 have invested with us. Maybe the other 1,000 haven't invested because they need cash flow. And we've been offering growth opportunities with our multifamily. We have never in the past presented a true cash flow opportunity. And so we kind of approached it with that mindset. Like, well, now we might be able to appease the other half of our investor database with cash flow options. And so, yes, we absolutely had to do education, drip campaigns, just what is a note down to the very basics and talk about the partnership. What does that look like? We've put out videos where we talk to potential investors about the different options. And now it's been about like we've probably been doing the marketing to our investors pretty solidly for 6 to 8 months. And we are starting to get a really good return of people coming back and saying, I'm in, like, let's do this. Let's have a phone call. I'm ready for the cash flow. And it's been a journey, but it has worked.
And there's a lot of leadership in that, clearly. Like, it's, I'm sure, a strange mix of trying to figure out, okay, how much do we just lean on our track record and expertise and what we've proven in multifamily and how we're able to pivot, and as well as the, all right, how do we keep our investors educated and informed and feel like they're excited about all of this as well. And I'm curious, like, as you make the pitch to your investors, like, how long do you see with really, it's getting into the vision for your business. Like, how long do you see the runway for, mortgage notes investing? Do you see this as a long-term strategy? As long as you're doing this business, you're going to be investing in mortgage notes, or do you see this as a, hey, this is for a season, but, with the market cycles, the hope is to get back into, those high growth opportunities in multifamily in the next 5, 10 years, whatever it takes for the market to turn around?
Yeah, that's a great question. Getting into notes has really taught me and us that diversification is so critical. For years, I thought that real estate, multifamily, single family, real estate in general could really cover every financial base that you might need, whether it's cash flow, tax depreciation, growth appreciation, you name it. And in many ways it does, but, it's not diverse enough, especially if you're like Emily and I, where you pivot and you get very heavy into like one asset class. I really, really, admire those who could see early enough that, hey, I'm going to go invest in like 6 different types of things, all under the umbrella of maybe real estate, but I'm going to kind of diversify myself in the event that this specific sector has some sort of difficulty in a certain market cycle. To get direct to the point, mortgage note investing for me is going to be there for the long term for a couple reasons. One, it's very passive. It's extremely passive. Like the return versus effort ratio is hilarious. Right. I mean, assuming you don't have to, assuming you make wise investments and you're not having to foreclose on half your portfolio. I mean, we're talking about a couple hours of work for years of a return. And that's significant, right? Especially as you start to grow as in your business and maybe taking on different things, you can always have that little chunk of your portfolio just working for you. Yeah. And not spending a lot of time on it. And then secondly, we're still going to be very, very heavily invested in real estate and multifamily, I think, is still going to be a great vehicle to invest in over the next 5 to 10 years. And so, whether or not we do that on an active basis, like we're doing today, or more of a passive basis, still, I am going to venture to say 30 to 50% of our portfolio will be in some type of multifamily asset going forward. And then the other half of our portfolio, probably split between mortgage notes and some other type of real estate asset. But yeah, really the whole experience has just taught us that diversification early on is super critical.
That's super helpful. And I'm thinking about our listener who, one of the things you said earlier was stepping into the multifamily space for you was the next level of sophistication. So I'm curious from what you've learned, what you've dove into the last year with notes, who is note investing for? And is it too sophisticated for somebody starting out? What advice would you give around that?
You know, I look back at the last year, and personally, I think note investing has created the most cash flow in the least amount of time with the least amount of effort. And so when I think about like versus multi, if somebody says, I want to be a general partner and I want to lead large multifamily projects, and then, and we have a conversation of effort and risk and work and responsibility versus getting into notes. Notes is a much easier business to get into. And you can either do it individually or you can do it with investors. And it, I personally think that it is a very, once you learn about it, it is a very simple business to understand. And then you can spread it across to other real estate asset classes if you want. I mean, when you learn how to create and buy notes, you can take that into the real estate sector with owner financing or buying a property with owner seller financing, and you become a better negotiator in your real estate business because you know the notes business.
It's really cool to see, yeah, how that can go hand in hand. And continuing on that thread, it sounds like the groups that you've found are local. I might be misinterpreting that, but when it comes to getting an education, are there certain groups that you would recommend beginners get plugged into? Is it something where it's best to try and find local in-person meetups? Is this a hyper-local investment strategy, or are you looking at note opportunities kind of with properties all over the market? It's such a new thing even to me that, you know, I kind of think like, you know, is this an area where like with multifamily, you kind of niche down in certain markets that you love? But anyhow, what programs would you say, and can that be an online deal, or should people be really just trying to connect first in their local markets?
You know, note investing out of everything we've done has been the most versatile from a location perspective. I mean, we own 20-ish mortgage notes right now, and they're all over the place. I mean, Georgia, Florida, Texas, Oklahoma, Michigan,
North Carolina, Arkansas, Missouri.
Yeah. It's like, it doesn't matter. I mean, it does matter. There are some states you want to be careful with as far as becoming a lender, but you know, it is so versatile as far as location. The due diligence process, I haven't physically seen any of these homes, right? The due diligence process, you do sit behind your computer screen and maybe a couple phone calls. And so with that, it's definitely hyper versatile. It's not hyper local. You can do it from anywhere. And we decided to associate ourselves with the Note School. It's an organization here. It was founded in Texas. But the membership, because of how versatile the investment vehicle is, the membership's all over the place. I mean, it's definitely not, centralized here in the Lone Star State. So, and what's cool is Note School, their reach is both in the program and outside of the program. So, as someone inside the program, obviously you get everything that you need from the program, but they also have, you know, a very stout YouTube presence. They have a live streaming, they call it the Note School TV, that they do every week. And so whether you're in the program or outside the program, engaging with Note School is very easy, and anybody can do it.
Mm-hmm. And kind of going back to the members, we are they're all across the country and potentially internationally too. And there's three calls a week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. There's coaching calls on different strategies for notes. And it is a high touch program. And so we are networking, we are seeing people, we are learning multiple times a week. There's opportunities for that.
Well, and the banker side of me, the lender side of me is popping up a question. So one of the big advantages of multifamily investing in and syndication is you can leverage other people's money. You can also leverage the debt and then buy larger things that, you know, do well over time. Is note similar? I mean, do you have to have all the cash up front to buy a note, or can you leverage debt in that way? And what does that look like?
So we have leveraged debt in a couple different ways. We've leveraged debt and other people's money. So one way that we do it is through my whole life insurance policy. I can borrow the cash value out of my whole life for 5.5%. It's the cheapest money I can find. And I can use that money to go buy notes at 10 to 12% yield. So I can create a spread on that. We have investors that will lend us money at 7%. And so we have used investor funds to go and purchase notes and then profit on the spread. And then we also utilize other people's money just in terms of we can buy the note and then we can sell off a chunk of it to an investor and recapitalize. And so there are amazing opportunities for other people's money and leveraging in the notes industry. But like we came in, we did have a chunk of change to invest in and those notes we keep for cash flow. And literally that cash flow is funding our lifestyle. But you can, it is, there are lots of opportunities for leverage.
That's awesome. I do love the flexibility there. And I'll include a link in the show notes to the note school, because that does sound like a really amazing resource for any of our listeners who's like, this is so brand new, but my mind is blown. I mean, that line that you had about the most cash flow for the least amount of time with the least amount of effort, that's a pretty good sales pitch for at least looking into this whole world of note investing. Yeah. That's pretty attractive. And it leads to a question of like, okay, this sounds too good to be true. You know, like how do you think about that or respond to that? Or what are the downsides or the risks that we haven't yet touched on that you're aware of yourself and think that others that are interested in this world should also be aware of?
Well, you know, when you start to talk about risk, the best thing to bring up is a book that both Emily and I read last year. That was a total mindset shift, total game changer from a mindset perspective in this space. And it's called The Banker's Code by George Antone. And what you learn there, and it was just amazing at the time that we read it, in parallel with the market shift that we're going through in the multifamily space, what you realize is the lender in any real estate transaction, if it's been set up properly, the lender is in the position of least risk. Always. Okay. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, the loan that they're owed is securitized by a piece of real estate, obviously. But, you know, a lot of times, like when we were flipping houses and buying rental properties, I always thought to myself, wow, you know, like to your point, Nick, like this is too good to be true. I'm going to flip a house and make $20,000 and the bank is going to make like $1,000. Like, who would ever want to be the bank? What a raw deal. Or if you were getting a home mortgage at 2.5% or 3%, like what a raw deal. Like, you know, bank's not going to make money off that. Well, at the end of the day, like banks, especially in commercial real estate, the next couple of years are going to just kill it, right? Unfortunately, a lot of real estate investors got over leveraged and bought properties they shouldn't have. And the banks are going to be the winner at the end of the day, right? Because they chose to be in a position of least risk, and they have all the protections on their side, all the negotiating powers on their side, right? If a borrower has an issue, guess who holds all the cards? The lender, right? On one hand, you can look at this and say, wow, it's just great returns, low effort, man, you know, just something doesn't line up. But in reality, yeah, like I can go get, you know, like I'm going to buy a mortgage note and I'm going to make maybe a 10% yield. Okay. And I tell a real estate investor that, and they'll say, wow, man, you know, I could go invest in the car wash down the street or the mobile home park, and I'm making like 20%. You know, I'll get a 20% annualized return. Well, two different levels of risk, right? As the lender, I've chosen to take a certain rate of return. I won't say the risk is zero, but it's very low, right? I hold all the cards. I'm in control. If the borrower has an issue, it's not an issue for me, right? So that's really what it comes down to, is who has the risk in the transaction. And typically, if it's been set up properly, if you buy your mortgage notes with good due diligence, you're always in the position of least risk as the lender.
And I'll talk to just one of the downside aspects is that compared to real estate investing, there's no good depreciation with notes. You don't get depreciation. Like, you are taxed on the interest that you make. And it's kind of just, it's hard to avoid that. But a lot of people then invest in notes through their retirement accounts. And so if you can invest through traditional accounts, you are deferring that tax. If you invest through your Roth IRA, you don't have to pay the tax on any of the interest that you make. So we invest both ways. We invest through our retirement accounts and through cash. But, you know, you're not going to get, when you invest in single family and multifamily, you get all this great depreciation. You don't get that with notes. So that is one of the downsides.
Yeah, no, it really is. And Adam, you know, I got to just take a minute as you lifted the hood under my job as a banker. You know, you gave our audience a little bit of insight there. But I think what really speaks to you guys, you said it earlier, is you're very risk averse. And I think a lot of times people would look on and they look at your story and say, what are you talking about, risk averse? But there's a recognition that the more you educate, the more you understand, the more you surround yourself with people who've done it well, who've navigated market cycles like you've talked about, and then putting yourself in a position where you are secured and collateralized. There's no way to mitigate all risk. As we know, you go outside, you start driving in a car, right? You can't mitigate all risk. But at the end of the day, the more you lessen that risk, the safer and the more you're able to build. And banks get that. And that's why I oftentimes tell people we're in the business of mitigating as much risk as possible. So, well, I love you guys' story. We're going to wrap this up with a gold nugget round like we always do. As always, so grateful for you guys and the entrepreneurial spirit that you bring, both with your business, the relationship game. So I created a couple unique gold nugget questions for you guys because we had already done the original ones back on episode 4. So you guys have not seen these questions. I'm hitting you with them right out of the gate. We're going to have fun. So as you build your business, as you've continued to surround yourself with people, I mentioned it earlier, you could build your little portfolio, go hang out on a beach, but you guys don't do that. You steward and care for people around you. So why, number one, why is it important to have an abundance mindset versus scarcity mindset?
You know, we always, like you said, surround ourselves with others. And so whether it's through the notes investing, whether it's through multifamily, whether it's through single family, we have always been in small group masterminds, accountability calls. And you cannot thrive in a group environment where we're all cheering each other on. If you say, oh, she got that deal and I didn't get that deal, like, boo on her. Like, you just can't have that kind of mindset. And even whether it was in any industry, we are competing with the people that we are having our small group masterminds with to buy some deals. And so you just, to have that abundance mentality, just keeps it. You have to think that there is enough deals for everybody. And if somebody else across the table from you got that deal and you didn't, there was a reason for it and you'll get the next one. And so that has been a consistent theme, is that we put ourselves in these small groups, accountability groups, masterminds, and these are our competition sitting at the table. But that's how you learn and that's how you grow. And that's how you become the best part of, you know, the best investor yourself.
I love that. And that speaks to the we're better together. Even though there's a healthy level of competition, there's a recognition that there's so much out there, so much availability and opportunity. That's a great answer. Next one here. What advice have you heard from experts that you've realized is complete bogus?
Ooh. Oh, wow.
I got an eyebrow raise there from Adam. There's a few things that went through his head, I think.
Well, some experts will say don't get into debt. And we have made millions of dollars using debt appropriately. And so, you know, looking forward, when you know how to use debt appropriately, you can leverage it and amplify your returns. So I wouldn't necessarily agree with the statement of all debt is bad.
It's a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. Next one here. Do you consider yourselves journey people or destination people? Do you find yourself enjoying the journey as you go, or are you laser focused on the end result? And how does that influence you where you're at today?
I mean, I think it's a constant reminder. I don't want to say constant struggle because that doesn't sound right. It's just a constant reminder that we should be more and more journey people, right? Destination focus. I mean, it's great to have goals, right? It's great to have some focus and to work towards things, but being destination focused, I think, can cause a lot of anxiety, right? It can cause a lot of, you know, when's the next good thing coming? And when I get there, all of a sudden now I need to pick another good thing to go chase, right? Which is different than, say, the pivots that we've been discussing during this call, right? So I always strive to be, and I'm still working on it, always strive to be more of a journey person. Hey, I woke up today, what am I going to learn? And after the week's over, you know, did we make progress? Am I happy with it? And if we didn't, am I happy with it? I think it's better to be a journey person in that context.
Love it. Love it. Since you're both on the episode, I'm hoping for an answer from both of you from my last one here. But what is one piece of advice you'd give your younger entrepreneur self? So I want you to think back when you left the corporate world and the journey you've been on over the last decade. What's one thing that you would tell yourself where you are today versus when you got started?
Well, in a joking manner, it would be by as much real estate as you could have, because we got in back when houses were 50 to 70,000, and I should have bought everything I laid my eyes on. But in a more serious fashion, I think it's be with the right people, and we got there, and we did eventually, but seeking out more small groups and more of those accountability and mentorships, to me, that would have, I feel like we went fast. I mean, we built a great thing over 11 years. And just being able to not have the same mistakes that other people do, like that's, you can save time, you can save years, you can save money by learning from other people's mistakes. So I think that would have been a lesson that I would have told myself, like embrace the knowledge and the education that you can get from your peers and people that have done this before you.
I would say, and if I'm just speaking specifically about myself, I would tell that person to just jump and do it sooner. Right. I mean, we joke a little bit about the whole risk averse comment. But it really and truly, you know, Emily, she quit her W-2 when our division was sold in California, and she helped build our business for the first 5 or 6 years. And I was still working a W-2. And that was comfortable for us, obviously, because, you know, still have some money coming in, pay for our expenses while we build the business. But looking back on it, I mean, you know, if you've got the mindset that you're going to succeed, regardless of what the definition of that word is, right? It could be buying 5 houses. It could be buying 100 houses. I mean, it could be, you know, it could be anything. If you've got the mentality that you're going to get there and you're going to do the work to get there, you don't need the you know, it's easy to say today, obviously, but you don't need the safety net. You just don't. I mean, you could go off and just do it. And if and when you fail, then you just get up and you try again, right? I mean, it's not, you know, looking back, I would have been like, hey man, just jump, just do it. Yeah. Join Emily and do it and go faster or enjoy the journey more, right? Instead of having like, you know, this career going on while you're trying to build the business. And that's what I would have said.
Those are both awesome encouragements. And Emily, I have a feeling that for many, many, well, for both of you, but to your point earlier, that you are the right people for many, many others. And so I'm so glad that you're in the space that you're in. So glad that you're doing what you're doing. Thank you so much for sharing an update on where y'all are at, for giving us an education here. For any of our listeners that want to connect with you further, where's the best place for them to go?
Our website is the best place. It's www.ae, like Adam and Emily, aeinvest.net.
Perfect. Well, listeners, a link will be in the show notes to the website there. Thank you so much for coming along on this journey with us. Listeners, do share this episode with a friend. Impress them now with your knowledge of note investing and let them know that it's because of what you learned from Emily and Adam. But thank you all and look forward to catching up with you again at some point soon.
Yep. Honored to be on, guys. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, everybody, that's a wrap. We will see you next time.